Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting live from our studios in New York City. Today, we're going to talk about how dark chocolate could reduce heart disease risk. That's a new study, and the cacao in there, and I'll get to that. Then turmeric prevents mosquito-borne virus spread, and then a hair loss drug is linked to depression in men, and then a chemical in plastic bottles aggravates your heart risk, and then studies show microwaves dramatically reduce nutrients in your food, and more on health and healing. Also, more on the environment today. I'm going to do about 10 different talks about the environment in short pieces, about how to win the climate wars. Let's talk about local pollution, not global pollution. We'll be dealing with that. And also, as a hurricane is bearing down on Galveston and Houston, parts of Texas and Louisiana, the rest of the West is bone dry and getting drier. In fact, conditions in the Great Plains, that's Wyoming and Montana and Colorado, they're devastating farmers and ranchers. We'll take a look at that. In fact, it's the worst flash drought in recent memories. And also some ways that wasting food hurts the environment. So let's not waste food. And a lot on that. My commentary today will focus upon a couple of things, including hospitals and why they are not serving our interest. And also from Black Agenda Report, Glenn Ford, why Bernie Sanders is an imperialist pig. Well, what does he have to say to defend that position? I'll share that commentary from Glenn Ford. And also, there's a lot of suicide now in people of all ages. Why? And what's behind it? Well, we're told stop suicide by helping Big Pharma. There's all these shady suicide prevention groups. Well, they all have something in common, according to Martha Rosenberg, and that is they're all funded by Big Pharma behind the scenes. So, yeah, they'll tell you to stop suicide by taking medications that cause suicide. And also, you heard about the Shia insurrection in Saudi Arabia? Of course not. The battle for a major community. And I'm looking right now at a photograph of that community, and it looks like Hiroshima after the atom bomb. So thousands of people, 20,000 at least, have been driven from their homes, 500 buildings destroyed, many people killed, and yet because this is in Saudi Arabia, our ally, the world's largest promoter of terrorism, we're supposed not to report on this. This is not supposed to be in the news. And indeed, you don't have to worry about seeing this in the mainstream media. They're not covering it. We will, to show you how our partner in crime is continuing down that road. And we have some audio clips today we're going to play for you, including beginning our series on vaccine safety. And also, we're going to hear about a woman who went to Syria during the war and is standing up as an independent journalist, Eva Bartlett, to all of the mainstream media propaganda and even the alternative media that supports the invasion and regime change in Syria, as it did in Libya. Well, she's right, they're wrong. We're going to pay attention to this. And just a quick note for those of you who are listening Monday to Friday, noon to 1 Eastern Standard Time, if for any time you turn on the radio and you can't hear it, maybe the signal's down, then you can always pick up a telephone and listen live. Let me give you that number. This is a new number because the other numbers are full. 424-203-8046. Again, you can listen with any portable listening device and your computer, cell phone, regular hardland phone by calling at noon, 424-203-8046. And if you can't listen live and want to listen later, I'll do the archives. It is 701-719-9976. 701-719-9976. Let's begin. From GreenMed Info, Dr. Ed Bauman did some research and found out, well, like a lot of us growing up in the 1950s and 60s, people used microwaves. The microwave was very popular. And most people remember when things were baked or water was used to boil. But that all began to change. The TV dinner changed all that. And you could have put the TV dinner in the oven and heated it for 15 minutes. But then modern science and technology brought us the microwave oven that could heat food in 30 seconds to a couple of minutes. Now, here's the problem. The industry claimed that microwave cooking protects the nutrient content of foods. Somehow, in tasting foods that came out of a microwave oven, the texture was changed, as was the flavor. Foods cooked or reheated in microwave ovens became rubbery and lacked the savory smells and layered flavors that come from using slow cooking. Nevertheless, people bought the convenience aspect, the speed, the simplicity of heating and eating prepared foods. The science, which has been supported by the food industry, has continued to claim the health benefits of microwave cooking. Well, recently published data from reliable, independent sources throws all that in the air. Now, does this mean that an occasional microwave will be harmful? Like anything else, if you had a bad food occasionally, your body can generally recover from that. But people generally don't have something that's bad. They have it bad on a regular basis. It becomes a ritualized part of their life. And the steady diet of eating foods cooked at high temperatures, like French fries, potato chips, meat, that's bad. And all those sensitive compounds in foods, like the amino acids, the fatty acids, the vitamins, the minerals, the phytonutrients, they do change. In fact, we have seen substantially that change. Here's the latest. There are three recent studies of historical food composition have shown up to 40%, that's 40% decline in some of the minerals once you start doing microwave. And a Scandinavian study of the cooking of asparagus found that microwaving caused a reduction in vitamins. In a study of garlic, as little as 60 seconds of microwave heating was enough to inactivate its alanase, or garlic's principal active ingredient against cancer. In a study published in the issue of Journal of Science and Food and Agriculture found that broccoli cooked by microwave with a little water loss, but 97% of its beneficial antioxidants, that's almost 100% gone. By comparison, steaming broccoli, you had only 11% adverse effect to antioxidants. Now, if you steamed it at a lower temperature and for a shorter period of time, it had no loss. And also, there was a reduction in phenolic compounds and glucosinolates when you microwaved the broccoli. And a recent Australian study showed that microwave caused a higher degree of protein unfolding than does conventional heating, and that means the amino acids are not easily reconfigured and used by the body. Also, microwaves can destroy the essential disease-fighting agents in breast milk that offer protection for your baby. So you don't want to be microwaving and heating breast milk. In fact, the milk lost lysozyme activity and antibodies and fostered the growth of more potentially pathogenic bacteria. So we were all lied to. Then again, we've been lied to just about everything that's mass marketed. So don't use the microwave. If you want to put it there as a monument to stupidity, vulnerability of our belief systems, you can do that. You know, just put a sign saying millions, hundreds of millions, even billions of people worldwide have used this stupid device, all to their detriment, never to their benefit. Now, another thing we should pay attention to is biphenyl A, or BPA. That's a chemical used in plastic bottles, like water bottles. and baby feeding bottles. And now it's linked to a narrowing of the arteries and a risk of heart disease. This is from the Pennsylvania College of Medicine of Exeter University. It says, our latest study, quote, strengthens a growing body of work that suggests BPA may be adding to known risk factors for heart disease. Well, that's not good. So try to use glass wherever possible. And especially in hot weather, you'll see people having plastic bottles of water. When that heats up, you've got problems. And by the way, talking about heating up, in Arizona, in Phoenix, volunteers were handing out bottles of cold water because of people being adversely affected by the heat and dehydrating. And for those of you who were using a hair loss drug, now it's shown that you could be suffering from depression symptoms and suicidal thoughts. Quote, the potential life-threatening side effects associated with this finasteride should prompt clinicians to have serious discussions with their patients. And this is from the professor of medicine in the Division of Endocrinology at George Washington University School of Medicine. And according to the National Institutes of Health, this, and I'll spell it for you, F-I-N-A, FINA, steroid, S-T-E-R-I-D-E, is used to treat male pattern hair loss or thinning of the hair on the scalp, leading to receding hairline or balding on top of your head. And the drug is also used to treat benign prostatic hypertrophy or enlargement of the prostate. And it's sold under the brand name Proscar, P-R-O-S-C-A-R. So you better be aware. Caveat emptor, consumer beware. This is published in the Journal of Clinical Psychiatry. Also, turmeric, the very good spice from which we get curcumin, according to the latest research that I'm looking at, and this study was done at Mason's National Center for Biodefense and Infectious Disease, it helps stop the deadly Rift Valley fever virus from multiplying in infected cells. Now, the mosquito-borne Rift, R-I-F-T, Valley fever virus, is an acute fever-causing virus that affects animals like cattle and sheep and goats, but also humans. Now, it's really strong in India and Indonesia, but in India and Indonesia, people eat turmeric every day, and they give turmeric if a person has a throat infections. They get if you have indigestion, if you have inflammation, if your legs are swelling, your joints are in pain, you get turmeric, and rightly so. It's really the active ingredient in turmeric is curcumin, and it plays a very important role. And by the way, back in the 1970s and 80s, I was working first with about somewhere between 400 and 600 persons. Before it was called AIDS, it was in some fast-track male homosexuals, and they were being treated by Dr. Stephen Chiesa, one of the leading gay physicians in New York City. And Stephen contacted me, and he had gone so far with his treatment, but he didn't know what else to do, and these people weren't getting a whole lot better, so I started to work with them, and I put them all on a healthy protocol and reversed these conditions. A lot of them were bowel conditions, thrush and infections, massive candida in the intestines and in the lungs, in the mouth, wasting. So anyhow, I found that turmeric was not strong enough. It just didn't do the job. But the active ingredient in turmeric, curcumin, which was not available at that time, I mean, you just couldn't find it. So I had to get some people to do some compounding pharmacy work to get curcumin at very high doses. We're talking 5 to 7,000 milligrams a day. And that had tremendous results. So later, after HIV was identified as the probable cause of AIDS, I implemented curcumin as a part of an overall protocol. There were over 50 items in the protocol, but it was a big one. And you could see the difference of people who are on curcumin versus not on it. And now it's used against all kinds of viruses. You would use it against herpes, 1, 2, 6. There's over 69 different types. Hepatitis, B and C, and cancers of all types, leukemia included, and also any inflammation of the heart or brain, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, memory loss. So it's just one tremendously important healing herb. We should always have it on hand. And if you really want to get maximum absorption, take 1,000 to 2,000 milligrams of the omega-3 fatty acids at the same time you're taking your curcumin. It enhances bioavailability. So it's a broad-spectrum antibiotic. It's very broad. It works and helps the human cells stop infection. And it also interferes with how viruses manipulate the human cell. So it's great as an antiviral. Dark chocolate could reduce heart disease risks, according to this study that was published by the Cochrane Library. They reviewed 20 other studies where dark chocolate or cacao powder consumption was seen to cut blood pressure compared to a placebo. And this was published in the European Food Safety Authority publication. And they issued the opinion on a health claim from those using the chocolate. So you want to help lower your blood pressure? Well, stop all the salt, exercise, get your weight down, and then about 200 grams maximum, 100 grams minimum of chocolate each day. That's only about 3 ounces. That's not a lot on the low end. And it can make a difference with your heart. Not the white chocolate, not the milk chocolate, not the sugary chocolate. And finally, with health and nutrition today, walnuts. Now, I help a lot of couples who are having problems with an intentional pregnancy. They're just infertile, either one or the other or both. And as long as they follow the proper protocol, you can make a big difference in helping them to conceive a healthy child. And walnuts that no one ever thinks about actually could improve this, because walnuts improve the quality of semen. In fact, a study published in Biology of Reproduction looked at whether increasing polyunsaturated fatty acids that are critical for sperm maturation and membrane function would increase sperm quality in men consuming a Western-style diet. So this was a Dr. Wendy Robbins at the University of California who had the research team revealing that eating 75 grams of walnuts a day improves the vitality, motility, and morphology of sperm in these healthy men. Quote from the study, which was Biology of Reproduction, it says, improved semen quality was associated with increases in blood serum omega-3 or omega-6 fatty acids in the plant source, the omega-3, and whether adding walnuts to the diet will go beyond the shifts in sperm parameters, as seen in the study, to improving birth outcomes for men with fertility clinic populations or in the greater populations not yet known, required further research. So what I look at is, how many different things must you change in a person's body in order to have a healthy outcome and go to full term without miscarriage, stillbirth, or birth defects? And it's generally over 50 things. So now we can add 51 walnuts, just a handful a day. And finally, one other last thing, and this is from Food Chemistry, the peer-reviewed journal. Extracts from apple peel can inhibit the activity of an enzyme linked to increased blood pressure. This is the Nova Scotia Agricultural College in Canada. What's this about? Remember I told you to peel the skin of 5 apples, throw them in a blender, and when you make your smoothie, you're getting all those quercetin molecules, those polyphenol molecules. Well, the flavonoid molecules are in there, and they're really plentiful in apple peels. and it's dose dependent, meaning if you want to inhibit any form of blood pressure rise, you have to have enough of it. And that's what it is. Quote, this is from the study, showed improving blood flow, that could help everyone, and improving blood pressure. Overall, the results suggest that flavonoid-rich apple peels extract has a potential to act as an effective ACE inhibitor in vivo. Thus, animal and clinical studies are warranted to confirm the results. So, once again, an apple a day keeps hypertension away. And also, could vegetables hold the solution for childhood asthma? Well, according to this latest study, the answer is yes. And they showed that by having more fruits and more vegetables in the diet and less of the sugared food and the refined carbohydrate, the animal proteins and the soft drinks with the high fructose corn syrup and the caffeinated beverages, yes, you can reduce asthma or eliminate it completely in children. Get them off dairy as well. That's the latest in health and healing. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to take a break and come back and go into some environmental issues with you. Please stay with us. Keep on pushing. Keep on pushing. I've got to keep on pushing. I can't stop now. Move up a little higher. Some way or somehow. I'd like to welcome all of you from all over the world. And I want to thank all the different independent stations that carry our program and our good friends up in Woodstock. Randy and all of you up there, it's a pleasure to be able to share what we do with you every day. And I want to let you know that I'll be coming up to Woodstock in the near future to premiere a new film, a film no one's seen yet. It's in the last days of post-production, but it is powerful. And we're working on another one right behind that. Now for some information on the environment. I'm concerned that one of the reasons that the average person rather feels tuned out or disengaged from environmental issues, unless it impacts them directly, like right now, I can assure you, everyone down in Texas and Louisiana and Mississippi and northern Florida are really watching this storm, because it's now just hit, gone from a tropical storm to up over 80 miles per hour to a Category 1 hurricane. That can do a lot of damage if it stalls, because now storms are releasing far more water than they did before. In fact, I posted a photograph up on my personal Facebook page where I post about, anywhere from 20 to 100 articles a day on progressive themes. And it was a photograph that first you think it's one of those nuclear bombs. That's what it looks like, a big cloud at the top. But then you read, and it's not a bomb, it's water. And we're talking about like 4 or 5 times the amount of water that's normally released in a thunderstorm all coming down at once. It can cause a flash flood, and it's dangerous. And that's what's happening now. So more heat in the Atlantic, warmer oceans, greater cloud formations, greater precipitation of the water into the cloud formations, greater power of the storm, even if it's the same category. So a Category 1 storm, let's say 5 years ago, and a Category 1 storm today, you could have double the impact and damage. So, and especially if it's slow moving, because it's just going to keep dumping water. You're going to have all these streets. They're not built for massive amounts of water. There's going to be massive flooding all over Texas, or at least half of Texas. So what do we do? If we're in one of the states where they're suffering from massive drought, or one of the 17 million Americans, living within a mile of an active oil or natural gas well, you should be concerned. In fact, according to the Daily Climate from Brian Benowski, The first peer-reviewed nationwide estimate of how many Americans live close to active wells and raises health concerns of just a mile away, increasing your risk of heart disease, lung disease, and brain problems and cancers, and certain birth defects like lower weight birth, preterm birth, and heart defect birth, and we're not even aware of it. This is on no one's radar. This is not being discussed. It's not even a call to action. Okay, so if you're a person who says, well, I'm not really into climate change, I'm not denying it exists, but I don't know about it. Well, how about the climate around you? Have you noticed that when it rains, your water doesn't taste the same? That's because your well is a shallow well, and the rain is saturating the soil. So now the rain is taking the pollutants in and around these oil wells and gas fracking wells, and it's taking it right down like you would absorb some toxins with a sponge. The rain is taking those toxins in the air and the soil and right down into your drinking water. Now we have millions of Americans who don't have clean drinking water. In this case, published in Environmental Health Perspectives, you're looking at wells found in Texas, Ohio, California, Oklahoma, and Pennsylvania. All have more than 1 million of their residents living within a mile of wells. So, to help this issue, make the issue local. For example, someone listening right now, and you're not an environmentalist, you're not a climatologist, but you do have common sense and you have reason to be concerned. So first, go to the peer-reviewed literature. Go to our site, because I post what to do, calls to actions every day. And then look at the literature and then work up a one-page flyer. And then print that out and get your neighbors, get members of your church, get members of the different social organizations you have in your community where you can talk about this. And because you're coming to inform them of a danger that all of you are exposed to, it's not about your politics. This transcends politics. It's not about your economic class. Rich or poor, you're all going to be drinking the same water, bathing in the same water, irrigating your soil, your flowers or lawns in the same water. So make an issue local. And if you do that, now you've got their attention, because now it's not something the Koch brothers are doing and you're Republican and conservatives, therefore you must align with that, even though common sense and reason and science says that you're on the wrong side of history. Well, okay. This is about local. And I'm finding that as long as I can get people to think locally and act locally, they're more likely to engage in this. Now, so make all climate issues local. Make all environmental issues local. And if you do that, you're going to get more people involved than if you start mentioning, well, did you hear that they had the hottest day in Iran and the hottest day in Iraq and the hottest day in Kuwait? And people just kind of shrug their shoulders, say, so what? And there's more pollution now that they found a new gigantic plastic patch in the Pacific. And there's a dead zone in the Pacific over 1,000 miles long. And now there's 770,000 gallons of polluted, or tons, excuse me, tons of pollution being put into the Pacific because of Fukushima. And that's going to pollute all the fish. So therefore, even if you ate tuna, that tuna from the Pacific is going to be deadly and with radiation in it. And they're going to say, well, I that's Japan. I don't go to the Pacific. It doesn't involve me. So try to bring everything back to a local level. In fact, I was stopped by a gentleman yesterday walking down the street. And he said, I was listening to your show and about what we can do to de-ghettoize America. And I just want to let you know that I am an architect and I would be willing to donate my skills to help if you get a place that needs to have a new construction, because I've been thinking about this for a long time. I just didn't know what to do on my own. And think of that. Think if we did something locally. So here is the word today. If we look at the worst block, and you got to take the worst block. If you take the worst block in any city in America, I don't care what city it is. Let's say here it would be in Camden, New Jersey, because that by every metrics, that's the worst city in the United States. Per population, the most crime, murders, poverty. And then you take the worst block in Camden, and then if you get the mayor or someone there to work with you, and the city then condemns that block and then gives it to a foundation. The foundation then will be responsible for putting together a plan that it would submit to the city to show here's what we're going to do. Now, here's what can be done on one block. First, you start off by testing the soil, and you're going to have polluted soil. So you want to dig it down so all the polluted soil is gone. You can always bring in clean soil. But then you take one section of the block and you make it into a community garden, a hydroponic garden. You can make that 30 foot high, 40 foot high. And therefore, fresh produce, fruits and vegetables and herbs and legumes could be grown 12 months a year. And because it's a community garden, everybody in the community, every family, whether you're a single parent or you have a complete family unit, you can come, and as long as you work there, you will get your food, let's say, at 70% discount. You have to have some money coming in order to buy the seeds and continue it going and having a manager. And then anyone you hire must come from the community. The whole idea is everything's community. So now you have food that is healthy. Why? Because almost all ghetto food is junk food. So this way you have healthy food all year. Now then you have another section of this. You have a nice room that's set aside that could hold several hundred people. And this you can do for local concerts, having teachers teach music and drama and literature. You can so they can perform. You can have it for community meetings. You also have addiction help with humanistic, holistic psychological counseling to get people going through some trauma. Out of that trauma, people have been bullied to rebalance themselves emotionally, people getting off medications to do so in a healthy way, people who have addictive problems so they can get help. So this is a place that would have some professional licensed clinical psychologists helping people. Then you have an assisted center, a holistic assisted living center. And here you would have people that would normally be going into assisted living and from there into a nursing home or dead, go in and instead of getting, you know, canteen food, which is garbage, and one nurse downstairs 24/7, but really nothing to do. You have a, you know, community television room. But it's a very morbid place if you've ever been in these places. And they're packed. There's more people needing to get in these. There are facilities, and they're not cheap. So in this one, the most that it would cost is 15% of a person's income. So if all person had was a pension or Social Security, they could still afford to live there because you're only taking 15%. Right now, the average cost of living is close to 50% for rent or mortgage. So it makes it humane. Your model is based upon a spiritual look instead of a mercenary capitalist look. But then the therapies are all holistic medical. Everybody can get chelation and vitamin C drips and homeopathy and exercise and yoga, meditation, and re-socializing. So a person doesn't feel they're approaching the end of their life. They can actually stop and reverse that process. And after a year or two, instead of having about a 60% turnover because people are going on to die or nursing home, they're actually healthy enough to go back into society because they've gotten their mojo back. And now once you have a model of that, who wouldn't want, who of us baby boomers, who wouldn't want to see your parents go to a place where they can be completely rehabilitated in their health and diseases, blood pressure gone, weight loss in place, memory improved, cognition improved, motor skills improved, heart quality improved, muscle mass improved, endurance. Of course we're going to want that. And that's so easy to do. You got to see what I do with people for 4 weeks. If I get someone for 4 weeks in a controlled environment, I can change everything in their life. But you can't do that just by talking on the radio because people need support systems. They need that detailed know-how. But if you had a holistic assisted living center, you could do that. And you film it. You show these people transforming themselves. And then you also have a building that people will go into, like a four-story building, and it will offer classes that are practical to life, like plumbing, carpentry, masonry, the type of jobs that a lot of people would not be able to get if they didn't have the skills, but start them as a lay journeyman on that road. And then, of course, you can see about a center for progressive politics within the community, meaning bring the whole community together, not just that block, the whole community, to say, let us do this. If we can clean up this block, now let's get all the blocks around us cleaned up and make those into parks. And then let's have people be out there to talk with the gang members, saying, this is a gang-free environment. You're not going to do your drugs here. If you want to get off drugs, we're going to help you. You're not going to be hitting on people for their money, because the number one victims of crime in communities are people who live in those communities, and we forget that. And so this way you can help the community. Right now, gentrification is the only thing we ever see. They'll go into a place in Baltimore that was a ghetto. They'll go into Detroit that was a ghetto. They'll buy up, developers buy up huge amounts of land, and all they do is they push the poor people out of that area, so they have to relocate somewhere else. So now, you know, some millennial will come in there and have a nice street to walk on and nice cafes. What about the people who are there? So this is a way that you don't gentrify it, you humanize it. And humanization with quality of life should be the forward movement against gentrification. So, again, that's something you could do. Now, then you could put in a sports pavilion, you know, where you have basketball and wrestling and boxing. And you can teach people sports, but you teach the sport based upon athletes who are retired, who know the sport, and it's all based upon character development. And there was a time when being a famous athlete, whether it was Willie Mays, Hank Aaron, Lou Gehrig, or Mickey Mantle, you were there to motivate others to make good choices in life. And today? No, not today. That's gone. But there was a time when we could bring that back, where sports is encouraged for not just fitness, but also character development. Now, that's just some of the things that you could do in one block, and that's doable, especially if you have people working together for a common good. So since this program is heard worldwide, but a lot of people in the United States listen, if you have such a block that the city's willing to donate, then they don't have to spend another penny. I'll put my money into it as a gift, and others will get others. By the way, do you ever think of this? When people are working for a corporation, the charter of that corporation states, directly or by assumption, that you are responsible as the fiduciary for making sure that the value of the stock is protected and the value of the profits are increased. And that's why you get shareholders who want to come in, because they know they can always get their return on their investment. But that's the way it used to be. Now it's all about buying back your own stock with $4 trillion this past year, sitting on $2 trillion more. That's $6 trillion that's not helping anybody but those people, and mainly people who run the companies. But what about the idea that every corporation should be able to give a small percentage of that profit they make, not to their directors or their administrators or presidents and CEOs, but rather to their community? Take a community and give it to that community, providing that it's shown that that community uses it 100% on the people in that community. I think that's one way that we could help people in our society. That's the latest on that. Remember, everything has to be local. This is from Mother Jones, from Andrew Cullen and Emily Benson. It says, the West is in the middle of the worst flash drought in recent memory. Conditions in the Great Plains are devastating farmers and ranchers. And I've driven many times through there. I see wildfires ablaze. Montana, the Dakotas are experiencing one of the worst droughts in their histories. And once green pastures are now just dry as a bone, and you see dead cattle everywhere. So they're selling the animals just so that they don't have to feed them anymore. On the one hand, They shouldn't be raising those animals, but on the other hand, they have raised those animals, and then they go broke and the water runs out. And if you don't have water, how are you supposed to have anything grow, vegetables or anything? And then when they did have farming, they almost always farmed genetically engineered soybeans or corn to feed to animals. So Mother Nature, in one sense, is helping to facilitate the transformation to a new concept in more natural and diverse agriculture. And just a couple of ideas. We're wasting food. Why? Because wasted food wastes water. And we do not have enough water in the United States. When you consume all of the water through irrigation and those automatic sprayers, most of it is evaporated. When the hotter it is, most water evaporates. Also, you can have some animal proteins. That's just throwing away millions of tons of food each day and tens of millions of gallons of water that was used to plant and grow that food. That just doesn't make any sense. Also, it releases methane. Remember this. Once you plant a seed and food is grown, it eventually makes its way to landfills, which themselves are a problem. And as that food begins to decompose and rots, it releases methane. And methane, of course, is a greenhouse gas. And it's 25 times more effective at contributing to CO2 or to global warming than CO2. So we want to get rid of animal proteins, but we also want to stop wasting food. It also wastes oil, which whether it's harvesting through oil and diesel and fossil fuels, you got to use those, most people do, to grow and transport and store foods. And it wastes land. You could use a lot less land to grow arable crops and even non-arable. You could use hydroponics. So we could transform all of American agriculture, save our farms, save our land, and save our environment. Also, we're not engaged in biodiversity. Biodiversity is the more diverse the ecosystem is, allowing for the full spectrum of life across different species of organisms, more berries, more fruits, then we're less likely to engage in deforestation. Because deforestation, where you destroy the flora and fauna, almost always because you want to graze soybeans or cattle. So there's a lot that goes in to that idea. And so finally, if we really want to fight global warming locally, that's what we do. Engage in a local issue that people are going to be impacted by, because that's what will cause them to relate. And the larger issue is stop all mining. Stop refining what you mine, like coal. Invest in capture carbon. The capturing of carbon takes the carbon out of the atmosphere, and that can do a lot for the solution to our problem. Cease all deforestation. Let's have a Marshall Plan for reforesting. End all fossil fuel subsidies. If you want to get out of the fossil fuel industry, stop subsidizing the industries. And exponentially increase the budget for wave power, geothermal power, and the new bladeless wind turbines. Subsidize farmers who don't rely upon industrial chemical agriculture. Subsidize organic farmers. And raise taxes on all meat products. Put a big tax on it. Stop subsidizing all meat companies. And by executive order, stop all oil drilling and commercial fishing and mineral excavation in the Arctic, and end hydrofracking, and stop all pipeline proposals. And you could do this simply by cutting our defense budget and downgrading our overseas bases and ceasing all military interventions overseas to reduce use of fossil fuels. So those are just some of the things we could do if we care. But then we've got the media denying global warming. Who in the media denies global warming? Well, how about accuracy in media? Acton Institute, Adam Smith Institute, African Center for Advocacy and Human Development, Alberta Prosperity Fund, Alternate Solutions Institute, America Rising, American Association of Blacks in Energy, American Council for Capital Formation, American Council on Science and Health. Boy, that's one organization that is up there. American Energy Alliance, American Enterprise Institute. In fact, how many times on Fox have you heard someone identified, well, this person comes from the American Enterprise Institute or the Council on Foreign Relations? These are all pro-petroleum groups like the American Petroleum Institute and the American Trading Institute and American for Prosperity and Americans for Tax Reform and the Annapolis Center for Science-Based Public Policy and Atlas Network and Australian Libertarian Society and the Australian Taxpayers Alliance and the Ayn Rand Institute. By the way, that's just the A's. You know, and your top climate change denier, John Boland, you see him on all the time looking like a walrus with constipation on Fox. Ted Cruz, Laura Ingraham, Newt Gingrich, Don Esterberg, Fred Singer, Rupert Murdoch, Steve Moloyle, Marco Moreno, founder of Climate Depot, Christopher Horner, Steve Milloy, and Patrick Michaels, the director of the Cato Institute, and Christopher Mockton, former advisor to Margaret Thatcher, and Sarah Palin, and James Inhofe, the senator from Oklahoma. So you see, as long as we have people who are policymakers and opinion leaders saying global warming doesn't exist, it's not a big deal, then no one's going to do anything at the national level. And as long as ALEC, the American Legislative Council, is lobbying at the state level, nothing's going to happen. So that's why we have to make it local. I'm Gary Knoll. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
You know you could have been a candle. I'm holding you so tight. You know you could have been a handle. The way you swept me off the field. You know you could have been a broom. The way you smell so sweet.
I just want to take a moment and thank everyone who helped our sister station WBAI in the spring marathon. This program, through our efforts, brought in close to 40% of the total funds. That's good because the station needs those funds. My issue is that I don't seem to be able to communicate with the station management that they gave their word that if I donated my time, donated my film, I even came back, flew in that day from out of state, even though I had to fly right back out again, all my own time, that all that money, 100%, would go to premiums. And if that were done by a sold-out house and everybody was there, saw we were packed, in fact, it was actually oversold, we would have had enough money at the station to pay for all the premiums. You would have gotten those premiums by now, and we'd be ready for the next drive. The trouble is, no one's gotten any premiums. And there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of premiums unpaid for. I have sent at least 6 letters to management pleading with them, polite, courteous, I have them, I'll show them to you, asking, please honor your word, and I have had no communication. This is unfortunate because we're going to lose trust. When you lose trust, then you don't have a relationship anymore. And if your audience lose trust in the station, you say you're going to do something, we're giving you our money, give it, do it. So it's long overdue that we come to some realization that we either are going to honor the audience or the audience is going to completely leave the station or not support us at all. And we have no one to blame except management for that. So what I'm going to do to help one final time, and this will be the last time, I promise you, that I'm going to do this model, because this model doesn't work. It means the station earns $100,000 from my audience, keeps all that money, and then I have to go out and work hundreds, even 1,000 hours, putting my time in for free in order to buy the premiums and then give them to the listeners. That model doesn't work anymore, and I will not be exploited, nor will I continue to make any excuses. If the station can't handle itself, then the foundation should deal with that. And remember, at the end of the day, it's the foundation, the Pacifica Foundation, that controls everything. And they're not doing a damn thing right now that I can see, and I blame the entire foundation management for being irresponsible in the extreme. They want to call me, I'll be happy to share it with them. Better that than me be a whistleblower. That they wouldn't like, and I'm one heartbeat away from that. So let's get this very clear. Until such time that every premium is delivered, I will not raise another nickel for the station. The only opportunity we have at this moment to raise money to help pay for this, since no one seems to be willing to take the money that I gave them from the work that we did, lectures and premieres, and what they did with money, I don't know. They're accountable to no one. And by the way, wonderful position to be in. No matter what you do, you cannot be fired, won't be fired. I don't care what you do. What a way to live. If only all of us were held to the same standards of non-accountability. So, listen again. Better write down this phone number, because you may not be listening to me live. On this particular station, my station, we don't engage in censorship, and we don't stop people and retaliate against them because they told the truth. So each day you can listen live by calling 424-203-8046, 424-203-8046, and that way you can always hear me. So my suggestion is reach out to the management and say, please honor your word. Gary said that all the money would go to helping. We're looking forward to getting our premiums. Let management, or let the National Foundation, which owns all the licenses, let them have a special fundraiser. If they spend all the money, okay, they spend it. But then it's up to the executive director to say, okay, let's do a special fundraiser just for BAI, just to raise enough money to buy all the premiums for not just Gary's audience, but for all the other people. And I have no idea how much the rest of the outstanding premiums are. So it's time for the audience to get engaged, because I've done everything humanly possible. I've spoken with the program director directly. I've emailed everyone, and nothing has happened. So I can't do more than that, but I will not be raising any more money until every single premium has been paid for and is given. I've donated hundreds of thousands of dollars of my time with the hopes that someone... Forget anyone ever saying thank you. That you will never hear. That is an impossibility. In the real world, people actually show some appreciation when people do something. But my God, everyone's taken everything for granted. Well, that's just the way it is. No, it's not the way it should be. So let's make a difference. Going out today, we're going to play you a clip from a woman who refuses to accept the status of truth in Syria. She went to Syria. She went to the battleground of Syria. She saw the truth. She broadcast the truth. But no one in the mainstream media, not CNN, not MSNBC, not these talking clowns at Fox, none of these puppets, no one would have her on. We will. Here she is in a short segment, 3 minutes, 45 seconds, telling you the truth about what goes on when the mainstream media is telling you lies. This is the truth.
When you talk about the Syrian people and what the Syrian people want, how can you quantify that? Do you have any independent surveys where you can actually document that? And secondly, you talk about the corporate media, the Western media, the lies, and all of this. Could you explain what you think might be the agenda from us in the... Western media, and why we should lie, why the international organizations on the ground should lie, why we shouldn't believe all these absolutely documentable facts that we see from the ground, these hospitals being bombed, these civilians who are talking about the atrocities that they have been experiencing. How can you justify calling all of us liars?
Sure.
Thank you.
I mean, there are certainly honest journalists amongst the very... compromised establishment media. Let's start with your second question. So, international organizations on the ground. Tell me which ones are on the ground in Eastern Aleppo. Yeah, okay, I'll tell you, there are none. These organizations are relying on the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, which is based in Coventry, UK, and which is one man. They're relying on compromised groups like the White Helmets, which let's talk about the White Helmets. The White Helmets were founded in 2013 by a British ex-military officer. They have been funded to the tune of $100 million by the US, UK, and Europe and other states. They purport to be rescuing civilians in eastern Aleppo and Idlib, yet no one in eastern Aleppo has heard of them. And I say no one, bearing in mind that now 95% of these areas of eastern Aleppo are liberated. The White Helmets purport to be neutral, yet they can be found carrying guns and standing in the dead bodies of Syrian soldiers. And their video footage actually contains children that have been recycled in different reports. So you can find a girl named Aya who turns up in a report in month, say, August, and she turns up in the next month in two different locations. So they are not credible. The SOHR is not credible. Unnamed activists are not credible. Once or twice, maybe, but every time, not credible. So your sources on the ground, you don't have them. As for your agenda, not your, but the agenda of some corporate media, it is the agenda of regime change. How can the New York Times, I was reading it this morning, or how can Democracy Now!, which I was reading the other day, maintain until this day that this is a civil war in Syria? How can they maintain until this day that that the protests were unarmed and nonviolent until, say, 2012? That is absolutely not true. How can they maintain that the Syrian government is attacking civilians in Aleppo when every person that's coming out of these areas occupied by terrorists is saying the opposite? How do I quantify the support of the Syrian people? The elections. In 2014, the Syrian people held elections. The point being, overwhelmingly, the people support President Assad. There are people that want change in the government. We're not pretending they don't want change. Everybody wants change. But in terms of support of the government, the point is they don't see President Assad as the problem. They see the problem as terrorism. They see elements of problems in the system that they have there. But President Assad, they don't see as the problem. They actually overwhelmingly support him. So I'm basing it on their choice in their leader, and I'm basing it on my interactions with people in Syria.
Keep in mind also that more than 600,000 Syrians are now returning to Syria, but only to the place in Syria that the Assad regime has cleared of terrorists. They're not ones going back to the terrorist territory, or I should say the American-supported and the British-supported terrorist territory like al-Nusra and al-Qaeda and ISIS territory that we funded, we trained, we protected, we propagandized in the White Helmets. You heard her say no one in the East Aleppo knew who the White Helmets were, and yet the American media praised them. Democracy Now!, you know, praised them. They won an Academy Award for a short documentary. That's how easy it is to propagandize and make your point. Now look at all the Syrians going home. They're going home. They're rebuilding Syria. And yet we have troops on the ground, air bases on the ground in a sovereign country. That is a declaration of war that breaches all the international covenants and treaties, and yet not a word in the mainstream media. Well, thank you all for listening today, and I look forward to sharing more on our next program. Have a nice day, everyone. Whoa, 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 whoa.